yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-5188. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, Appellant versus Office of Administration. Ms. Weissman for the Appellant, Mr. Bondi for the Appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Ann Weissman, and I represent the Plaintiff Appellant, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. With the Court's permission, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. For the first time, this court is being asked to consider the agency status of an EOP component that does not advise and assist the president, but at best provides assistance that makes the EOP as an entity run more smoothly. From Susi through Armstrong, the starting point for this court's analysis has always been an EOP component that advises and assists the president as spelled out in its chartering documents. So, for example, in the Susi case, the reorganization plan that established the Office of Science and Technology expressly provided that OST was to assist the president and advise the president on matters concerning science and technology issues. Likewise, in Armstrong, the National Security Council, under the National Security Act, was authorized to advise the president on matters of national security. And in Sweetland as well, the executive residence, both through statutory language and appropriation language.
What's the substantial independent authority here that you claim the Office of Administration has?
Well, let me take a step. We claim that the Office of Administration in the first instance does not advise and assist the president. All of the authority that it exercises.
Is that then you say we don't need to ask the next question, whether there's substantial independent authority? You think it's satisfied simply because there's no advice and assistance to the president?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. And I think in that respect, it's at the very end of the continuum than the Sweetland case was. In Sweetland, this court was looking at the executive residence. And once it concluded that the executive residence had no other responsibilities except to assist the president in running his residence and performing his ceremonial duties, the court did not need to go into the analysis laid out in Meyer v. Bush.
Can we jump to that analysis, or do we have a couple of other preliminary steps to get there first on this case, counsel?
Well, certainly I think, Your Honor, in the first instance, what the court has to look at is the chartering documents and decide what kind of
the procedural questions of what the standard of review is, what the standard was that the district court was to apply, and who had the burden on this issue below.
Well, the standard,
don't you have a little hurdle to get over there? If she did not err in assigning the burden, then our standard of review is somewhat different, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Your Honor, but I would submit under either standard of review, a more deferential one or one that places a higher burden on crew, we pass muster, and it's clear that the OA is.
Go at it with the higher burden and tell me how you pass muster.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If the burden is on you, how do you pass muster?
Because just simply looking at the chartering documents, the way the Office of Administration was set, the fact that expressly by executive order, it inherited or it was delegated all of the authority that the president had as head of OA, the fact that by executive order, it is expressly excluded from providing administrative support services primarily in support of the president, the fact that it has functioned as a FOIA agency almost since its inception, consistently has had a FOIA regime and statute that applied to all of its records. I think all of the indicia here is that OA is an agency. And again, on the substantial independence.
Why does it matter that they had a view that they were an agency at one time and changed that view? I mean, are we bound by the view that their lawyers may have had at one point?
This court is not bound by that, but I certainly think
what relevance does it have? They could have made a mistake, right?
Well, I think in this case, it demonstrates that OA has functioned as an agency with no hint that it raises the kinds of constitutional concerns, which is why Congress exempted in the first place both the president and those entities that are the functional equivalent of the president's immediate personal staff. And that, I think, really has to be the touchstone, and that's in part my answer to your earlier question, Your Honor, about the substantial independent test. As this court in Meyer made clear, whether it's articulated as it was in Soucy as solely to advise and assist the president, or whether it's articulated as the substantial independent authority test, there may at times seem to be some tension between these two, and they might suggest in a specific case different outcomes. But in Meyer, the court said there's a harmonizing theme that runs through both. At their core, what they're designed to determine is the EOP component in question the equivalent, the functional equivalent, of the president's immediate personal staff?
I'm going to back you up because I'm still not satisfied. If the trial court did not err in the assignment of the burden, what is our standard of review of her decision?
I believe it's a de novo standard of review, Your Honor.
If she did not err, why would it be de novo?
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood your question.
She did not err. If she were reviewing the factual finding upon which she made her determination.
You would have to defer to her factual findings. But the district court, essentially, her opinion, I think, rests less on factual findings than it does the legal analysis and conclusions she drew from those findings. We submit that the district court made two significant errors, putting aside the error of who she placed the burden on, which I think both...
You would have to concede, maybe you wouldn't. I would think you would have to concede that if she erred on that, it's invited error.
I'm sorry?
If she erred on the placement of the burden, it's invited error, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
It is. So you can't very well win on that one, can you?
Perhaps not.
It's hard to win on an invited error. I'm not asking you to concede you're going to lose. But
I understand that it's a far more difficult climb for us. I certainly concede that, Your Honor. Okay. But the fundamental legal error that the court committed, aside from any factual findings that she reached, is that she misunderstood, first of all, the purpose of the substantial independent test and believed that we had to show that OA was exercising substantial independent authority vis-a-vis non-EOP agencies. And there's nothing in this court's cases, in this court's case law and precedent, that makes that clear, that is an absolute prerequisite. I think what everyone struggled with in this case, and what perhaps clouds the case a little bit, is the kind of entity the Office of Administration is. It's very different from what this court has seen before, with the possible exception of Sweetland, which, as we said, we think is on the other end of the spectrum. And that's because entities like the Council on Environmental Quality and the National Security Council all have a substantive, programmatic policy-making portfolio that's unique to them within the executive office of the president. And so, aside from their interactions with the president and advising and assisting him, the only way they exercise other authority is through outside entities, because they're the exclusive, repository within the EOP. They don't have any reason to interact on environmental issues. But OA, because of the kinds of services it provides, has a different relationship and different interactions. OA provides solely administrative support functions. We don't dispute that. That's clear in the record. But the difference is, not only does OA provide no support for the president in that respect, but it does deal with other EOP entities. But the nature of its relationship with those other entities demonstrates it's acting completely independently from the president. And I think the court both confused the purpose of the substantial independent test, which, as I said, is designed to get at the core, is this the functional equivalent of the president's immediate staff? And I think she erroneously seemed to substitute the word substantive for substantial. And so not focusing on the degree of independence, which is what this court in Meyer said was so critical, but on the nature of the duties that it was exercising. And we know, I think, from the Sweetland case that can't be the answer, because if it was enough in Sweetland that the executive residents only had support functions, I think the court could have stopped its analysis right there. But it went on to look at, does this entity have any other responsibilities beyond assisting the president? And what was so dispositive in Sweetland was that the executive residence does not. Whereas here, again, as I stated earlier, we can't, there's nothing in the record to suggest that OA has ever provided a direct assistance to the president. Now, of course, we acknowledge...
Direct assistance to the president. I mean, as I understand it, they're providing administrative support to units within the executive office of the president, right?
Except for the president, yes.
Except for the president. So is the difference between this and the residents' argument that somehow the residents were providing, the folks on the residents' staff were providing more direct assistance?
They were providing assistance only to the president. They were focused inward at the president.
Well, there were 70 people who were taking care of the White House.
But it was all directed at assisting the president directly.
Yes and no. The fact of the matter is that there's a good many offices over there, as I recall the case, and the president may not, throughout his entire tenure, even go into one. But they were nevertheless, you know, helping and cleaning up and painting, and they had carpenters and plumbers to keep the White House operating. And the White House itself is partly residence and partly office building, but the plumbers and the electricians and the carpenters and all the other people on that staff were not simply doing the plumbing within the residence. They were doing the plumbing and all the rest of it for the entire White House.
Well, I have...
So how is it that... What's the difference, back to Judge Griffith's...
I think there are two differences here that are critical. One is that there is another component within the executive office that performs the administrative support functions for the president, and that's the White House Office and the White House Office of Records Management. That's to the exclusion of OA. So, you're absolutely correct that the kinds of support that the OA provides spills over into the president. As this court recognized, I think it was in Meyer, you can say that any component in some way serves the president. That's not the dividing line. And
what is the statutory interpretation question? Frame the issue up in terms of the statute.
By the statute, I presume you mean the Freedom of Information Act.
Well, that's the only one we have, isn't it?
Right. Well, the issue, I think, Your Honor, is this. When Congress amended the FOIA in 1974 to add in the definition of the executive office of the president to agency, did it intend to expand the exclusion beyond those components that serve as the functional equivalent of the president's immediate personal staff?
So I have your argument. As I understand it, Sushi talked about the sole function of the office was to advise the president, and the Kissinger case, the Supreme Court picked up on that. It was post-amendment. The cases in our court that talk about an agency having functions outside the ambit of the executive office of the president are doing so, under your argument, only to show that the sole function of that entity was not to advise the president, because it had other functions which were controlling agencies outside the executive office of the president. Is that it?
Yes. Okay. But again, it goes back to I think it's important. Why I keep coming back to the functional equivalent of the president's immediate staff is the other piece of it here. When Congress enacted the FOIA, it did not extend it to the president because it recognized to subject the president to a comprehensive disclosure regime would raise very serious separation of powers concerns. And I think likewise, when it amended the definition of agency to include the EOP...
Well, what are some units within the executive office of the president that do... serve that function?
I'm sorry, which function is that?
As if they were the immediate personal staff of the president. What are some other ones?
Well, the ones this court has recognized, aside from the executive the executive residence, it's recognized the National Security Council because it's a hair's breadth from the president, as they talked about, in providing national security advice. The Council on Environmental Quality, the Office of Management...
The Council on Environmental Quality was... recognized as an agency.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I want to know what's functional equivalent of immediate staff.
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm answering the inverse of your question.
You mean the Council on Economic Advisors?
The Council on Economic Advisors is one, yes, that has been recognized as not an agency because it primarily provides advice to the president. And again, I mean, even if you look at this issue from the lengthier analysis laid out in Myers, you know, I think it still is the case that OA is an agency. It has a set structure. It has no operational proximity to the president. And I think that is perhaps the most telling factor of all here. How can it be, How can you articulate how the OA is the functional equivalent of the president's personal and immediate staff when it simply has no operational proximity and it has no direct responsibility? If it's enough that it simply, by doing its functions, it serves the president, I think that would completely eviscerate the 1974 amendments to the FOIA, because it would mean that every EOP component is now outside the FOIA because it assists
the
president.
What is the
information you saw? You mean through discovery?
No.
I'm sorry, the FOIA request. The FOIA request here, we sought documentation about that the Office of Administration had prepared about the many millions of email missing from White House servers. And I think...
Say it again, because I just didn't understand your last...
Okay. We sought, our FOIA request sought documentation that the OA had prepared because the OA administers the email and the electronic servers and records at the White House. We saw documentation that the OA had prepared concerning the many millions of email that were missing from White House servers.
Emails between whom and whom?
Our understanding, and that's part of the information that our FOIA request seeks, our understanding is that the emails cover whole components of the EOP.
Like, for example, emails between the Council on... The head of the national security function in the White House and the president's chief of staff, those emails, right?
So we're not seeking the emails themselves, Your Honor.
We're seeking information about them.
We're seeking information about the administration of the email system.
Yeah.
And that's really
isn't
what
isn't that
we're
the very kind of thing that does begin to impinge upon the same separation of powers concerns that have driven the other cases to hold that the particular entity is not an agency?
I would say no, Your Honor, and the reason for that is with every FOIA request, with every executive branch agency...
Well, you're going to give me the slippery slope argument.
No, it's not the slippery slope. It's the fact that there are exemptions, Your Honor, and it is those exemptions that offer the executive the protection. This circuit has recognized...
You could say that about the president, too. I mean, you could say that... But the Supreme Court rejected that, and In re Cheney rejected that argument that the secretary, the president can invoke executive privilege if he doesn't like it. And the Supreme Court rejected that. So,
I think what Congress and the court has been struggling with, not here today so much as throughout with these issues, is how do you reconcile what at times are two competing interests. On the one hand, we have the president's legitimate constitutional interest in not having unduly, a scheme inflicted on it that is unduly obtrusive of his legitimately constitutionally protected rights. But the other side of that is the Freedom of Information Act, which also was enacted for the specific purpose of promoting accountability through transparency in government. And I think the line that Congress drew was to say, we will include the executive office of the president within the reach of the FOIA, but there is an out for those entities that are a functional equivalent of the president's staff. And in doing so, it didn't look at what is the nature of the records that each component generates in order to decide whether or not they're within or outside the agency line. Instead, it looked at what is the nature of the relationship between the entity and the president, and what is the degree of independence that that entity has. And so I would certainly concede that any particular FOIA request could raise a concern of intruding, and that is why I think the exemptions exist.
I think that probably gets to an end to a response to the last question, and you are well over your time. So unless my colleagues have further questions, we'll hear from the government.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is Thomas Bondi. I represent the appellee, the Office of Administration. Your Honors, the question in this case, as you know, is whether the Office of Administration, OA, a component of the Executive Office of the President, is an agency within the meaning of the Freedom of Information Act. The district court answered that question in the negative, and respectfully, we think that's the correct answer, and the district court's decision should be upheld. As the district court properly explained, this court's cases make absolutely clear and repeatedly clear that the touchstone for this kind of inquiry is whether the component at issue exercises substantial independent authority.
You understand we write not just for one case, but for those cases that might follow. And I'm not quibbling with you, but actually I am quibbling with you. The issue here is not just whether it is an agency, but whether the plaintiff has established that it's an agency. Plaintiff has established that it's an agency, given that the court assigned the burden, perhaps erroneously, but assigned it to the plaintiff, so that we could hold not that this isn't an agency, but that it hasn't been established to be an agency on this record, couldn't we?
Yes, Your Honor, but I'd
like to have the precedent that it isn't an agency, but you could win this case and still not have that precedent.
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely, but I just want to make clear what our position is, that just as a matter of law, based on this entity's foundational charter documents alone, we think it's clear that just as a matter of law, as a matter of the form and function of this entity, it's not a FOIA agency as a matter of law. And I think the critical point here, as the district court explained at some length, both as a matter of its form and as a matter of its authority, this entity, the Office of Administration, is just absolutely, totally unlike all of the entities that this court has held.
What do we do with the language in our cases that talks about the sole function test? I mean, the sole function of the OA is not to support the president, right? It also supports other entities.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I would beg to differ. The whole reason for OA's existence, the very reason it was created, was essentially to be the president's management arm. Before OA, the management of the EOP units was viewed as somewhat chaotic and decentralized, and the point of OA was to provide centralized management so that the president could manage.
Well, that may be its primary function, but is its sole function?
It is, and I think part of the way this court has said one looks at that question, how do you answer whether...
The statute, rightly or wrongly, constitutional or unconstitutional, says the executive office of the president is an agency for FOIA purposes, point one. And here we have an entity that manages the executive office of the president. Doesn't it necessarily follow then that the entity is also an agency?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And it's true, of course, that the FOIA refers broadly to the executive office of the president, as you stated. But this court's cases and the legislative history, I think, make clear and beyond dispute at this point that what that language was intended to do was to adopt into the law the SUSE standard. And in SUSE, of course, the court found that OST, the Office of Science and Technology, was a FOIA agency precisely because, in SUSE's words, it had been granted independent authority independent from the president, to evaluate federal scientific programs. It had authority separate and apart from the president. That's why SUSE came out the way it did. And that's the standard that was adopted into law, and that's exactly the same reasoning that was also applied by this court, Your Honors, in concluding that OMB is a FOIA agency and that CEQ, the Council for Environmental Quality, is a FOIA agency.
I don't know about CEQ. I don't think CEQ has any authority beyond the Office of the President. That case, I think, is... I think it's wrong.
I don't want to argue with Your Honor about that, but certainly I think
the agency. This is aside from the point, but CEQ was set up by Jimmy Carter in an executive order. Had no authority from Congress to issue regulations or anything. It keeps issuing the regulations, but it doesn't have any congressional authority to act in a quasi-legislative capacity, and has no authority to supervise any other agency. So
well.
I know.
In the cases treat CEQ as an entity that has the authority to promulgate binding regulations that are binding on other entities. And right or wrong, OA has no such authority.
But let me get back to it seems to me the argument you're making is the primary function of the OA is to serve the president. But again, we have these many standards floating out there, and one of them talks about sole function.
I'm not running away from that standard, Your Honor, and I think what this court's cases teach is that the way one goes about answering that question, is an entity like this, is its function solely to advise and assist the president? The way one goes about answering that question is to look at whether it has any authority independent from the president. All these verbal formulations are different ways of getting at the same thing.
Well, the Office of Administration, let's go back to CEQ. Let's assume that Pacific Legal case is right. The Office of Administration provides support for CEQ, doesn't it?
It provides unified common support for all EOP entities, including on both sides of the FOIA line.
Well, for CEQ.
Yes.
And we've held that CEQ is performing functions outside of simply advising the president. Why doesn't it follow, therefore, that the Office of Administration is, in providing support for CEQ, is not solely advising the president or assisting the president?
Because I think the whole point of OA is that it doesn't just provide services for this unit or that unit. It serves essentially as the president's management arm to match.
So does CEQ.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
So does CEQ.
Well, but CEQ, and again, I'm assuming that case is wrongly decided, the critical point about, is rightly decided. The critical point about CEQ for this discussion is that it has its own authority to promulgate binding regulations, just as OMB has a statutory grant of authority to take actions vis-a-vis Congress, to present the budget to Congress, and just as OST, as this court described in Susi, has independent authority to evaluate federal scientific programs. However you slice those attributes, OA has none of them, and that's just the substance. It's true on form as well.
Other than CEQ, what entities within the executive office of the president have we held, or agencies in the meaning of FOIA?
This court's cases has held that with respect to three entities, CEQ, right. OST, the Office of Science and Technology in SUSE, and OMB, the Office of Management and Budget. And if I can add one more, there are other entities within EOP that haven't been addressed by this court's case law. One example would be the United States Trade Representative, which I think it is a FOIA agency. So there are a few others.
Is a FOIA agency?
I think it has independent authority. No, there's no case law addressing it.
For purposes of this argument, you're going to concede that it would be a FOIA agency. Now, the next case we get that's a FOIA request for the trade rep, you don't have to concede it.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Your Honor.
I understand you may not be authorized to make that concession.
But has the Office of Legal Counsel spoken to this issue?
Yes.
Okay. And when was that?
August 2007.
Okay. And that's the first time?
I believe so.
Okay. Who did the legal analysis earlier that where the Office of Administration conceded that it was a FOIA agency? Are there any documents that were uncovered?
There are some documents, a scattering of documents in the record. And
wasn't there a letter from Associate White House Counsel?
Yeah, I'm thinking it originated within the White House Counsel's office. But if I can explain, Your Honor, I think one of the important things when one looks at, you know, what was the position then, what is the position now? Now, fast forwarding to today, this question is answered against the backdrop of a whole line of D.C. Circuit cases, the ones we're discussing here today. And except for SUSE, which was the first one in 1971, none of those cases existed back then. So really there's a whole new, not new, but a whole developed
back
legal
then,
backdrop now.
The White House counsel advice came when? What year?
I believe it was approximately 1978, Your Honor. This entity, OA, was created in 1977, and I believe it was shortly.
So that was during the Carter administration?
Yes.
There's something in the JA about that, but
yes.
I think it's illegible.
I had trouble reading some of the pages, Your Honor.
Is it your contention, during the latter part of the Clinton administration, there was a, I don't know whether it was formalized or not, but the practice grew up, and you may be familiar with this, being in the Department of Justice, of honoring FOIA requests, even though the department believed that the request was invalid, on the basis that there's no harm, you know, why fight it? Give it to them, right? You know, the heck with it. And that was reversed early in the Bush administration. Is that what was going on in the Carter? Is that your position that same thing was going on in the Carter administration?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think. I don't know for sure. There's not a whole lot about it in the record, but my sense is no, that's not what was going on.
Okay. He thinks the Carter administration is ancient history.
Well,
it is.
We think it is.
Your Honor, if I see my time's almost up, Your Honors, if I could add one more point, and again, There's form, there's form and substance here, and I want to remind Your Honors, as a matter of form, OA is headed by the President. The head of the Office of the Administration is the President. He's the head of OA.
And he spends a lot of time on that.
No, I'm I'm not saying he does, but the form matters here,
they,
and
they
the form and substance
the
reinforce
President at
each
all.
Other.
The phrase, one of the standards we have is advise and assist. They don't advise the President at all, do they? They may assist the President, but you're not making the argument that they that the OA advises the President of the United States.
I am, Your Honor.
On what? What's an example of advice the OA has given to the President of the United States?
The director of OA, the sort of staff director of OA, is the chief administrative officer of the executive office of the President. So he gives administrative advice through a chain of command. I'm not saying he meets every day with the President, but he is the chief administrative person in the entire EOP. So he would provide advice on administrative matters.
My colleagues have
where are their offices? Yeah, one question. Where are the offices of OA? Are they in the White House or are they elsewhere?
I mean, where are they physically located?
Right.
I would guess the old executive office building, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, actually. I think it's in the new, but
I don't know, Your Honor.
Across the street?
Yeah.
I don't know.
In the new?
I think so. Unless the court has any further questions, Your Honors, I have nothing more.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right, your time was up. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to go back to the court's question about what entities, Judge Griffith's questions, within the White House have been found not to be agencies. I mean, because two additional ones that I would remind the court that this court has addressed in the past. One is the White House Counsel's Office, and the other is the task force that was set up, I think it was under President Reagan. And again, I think if you look at the kinds of entities those were, they stand in such stark contrast to the OA. They were advising, the White House Counsel really is the hair's breadth away, whispering in the President's ear legal advice.
What do you make of counsel's point that, in fact, the head of the Office of Administration does advise the Office of the President on administrative matters?
I don't think there's anything in the record that supports that, and it, as a practical, functional matter, the Office of Administration is providing any advice to the President.
Who directs the head of OA? Is he just a kind of a free agent?
Well, through Executive Order 12028, the President delegated the entirety of his authority to the head of OA, meaning that, of course, he's responsible ultimately to the President, just as every other EOP component is. But this court in the past, in looking at this issue, has always looked at, has there been any authority delegated either from Congress or the President to the entity in question? And the answer here is yes. And so, to get back to the advice, I think what the government is essentially relying on is the chain of command and the fact that in that chain, the President is above the OA, and the district court here properly rejected that in analyzing whether or not there was operational proximity. Just finally on the issue of who properly bears the burden, I think it's pretty clear from cases like Kissinger that the agency bears the burden of demonstrating their agency records. And the line of
cases... Granted, the district court then held that you had the burden as a jurisdictional question, but didn't you take that position in the district court?
No, we didn't. We never advanced affirmatively.
I thought you took the position that this was a jurisdictional question. In fact, no, I don't think that. I know that. You took that position in the district court that this was a jurisdictional question.
We conceded that the court had treated in another case, similar case, the issue is jurisdictional. But as we pointed out in our briefs, ultimately, it's the court's responsibility, not the parties, to ensure the jurisdiction. And so there's no waiver here.
You're talking about your brief to us?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Counsel, the cases you're talking about are cases that hold that you cannot waive a lack of subject matter jurisdiction. I don't think you have any cases that say that an error ceases to be invited error because it had jurisdiction in the phrasing of the question. This is not parallel to those cases you're citing, is it?
I think the government's initial brief that it filed in the district court was a motion for judgment on the pleadings. Mm-hmm. And we came back and responded and said, we cannot respond because we need discovery. I think what you're really looking at is the rubric of Rule 56.
Jurisdictional discovery.
No, we never asked. No.
Granting you this should have been a 12B6 motion, treated as if it were a 12B6 motion, not 12B1. But your statements in the district court record are to the effect that this is a jurisdictional question, which would have put the burden on you rather than the government. And the cases that you cite about jurisdiction not being waivable are perfectly apt where the question before us is, was there a lack of jurisdiction? But they're really not on point on this question, are they?
I see the distinction that the Your Honor is drawing. I think it's clear on the discovery we requested that we were seeking discovery that went well beyond jurisdictional discovery, unless the court has any other questions.
I have a question. Is this an all or nothing proposition? And by that, what I mean is if the entity does perform a substantial role in advising and assisting the president, but also performs outside roles, mm-hmm. Why shouldn't it be that the entity is an agency when it's performing the outside roles and is not an agency when it's advising and assisting the president? And the question then becomes whether the FOIA request is one directed toward the information generated when it was doing one activity versus another.
Well, that's an argument, Your Honor, that this circuit rejected in Armstrong, where it was advanced the proposition that an agency, the NSC, could be a so-called dual hat entity and could function both in both capacities, and the court should analyze it based on, is it acting in its advisory capacity or is it acting in its agency capacity? And I think had the court elected to adopt that approach.
Was it actually rejected in Armstrong? I don't remember that.
My understanding is that it was, but perhaps I'm not as familiar with the briefs that were filed in that case, so I can't say to certainty that the issue was presented so squarely that the court had to give an up or down to it. I do submit that when you look at the body of case law from the circuit, at times it's hard to reconcile it with the principles we've been talking about, because when you have an entity,
it wasn't rejected. That you want to.
I don't think there's anything in the, but certainly the court
wasn't reached. The issue wasn't reached.
I think that's probably the best characterization. But I know that it was advanced as one possible way that the court could have resolved this issue. And so, to the extent
why couldn't we resolve it that way now if it hadn't been rejected?
I mean, I do think as a practical matter, it may be very hard to sort out, and I'm not sure it would be. Again, I think in order to do that, I think you'd have to find that some aspect of the Office of Administration functions to advise and assist
Wouldn't
the president.
Would you argue then that even that if it's an agency for FOIA purposes, it still has the exemptions available for
absolutely, Your Honor,
that fall on the other side?
Of course, absolutely. I think that is definitely the protection that the executive is afforded.
The exemptions are not coextensive with. I mean, some of them fit and some of them don't. I mean, that's the whole reason for holding that a particular entity is not an agency is because even with the exemptions, there's a separation of powers problem. I mean, right?
Well, I think in the context of whether it's an agency, as I've said repeatedly, I think it comes back to, is it functioning as the equivalent of the president's immediate staff? Right. And if it's not, I think, you know, again, it gets back to you're trying to reconcile two competing interests, the transparency and accountability interests of the FOIA on the one hand and the president's legitimate interests on the other.
It reminds me of F. Scott Fitzgerald's definition of insanity. Do you know what that is?
Oh, I've heard
the ability to keep two equal and opposite propositions in one's mind at the same time.
Well, I hate to think we're talking about insane notions.
But that may be the law.
Unless the court has any further questions.
I see none, and thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. Call the next case.